Welcome to another edition of the Blue Ribbon College Basketball Podcast. We are deep into the NCAA tournament. We're going to talk about games, coaches making moves, all sorts of things going on. Alongside Chris Dortch of Blue Ribbon, I'm Kevin Ingram. What's going on, man?
Man, stoked but weary. I logged four consecutive 12-hour days in my easy chair. Obviously didn't go to a regional this year because you and I are going to Phoenix. So I thought I would save any further trips for that one. Yeah. But, man, the games never disappoint. I don't think there was quite as many bizarre ones, although Kentucky fans might tend to argue with that. But it's always exciting. Just for example, that Houston game, when they were up 10 on Texas A&M, and I've seen Texas A&M play all year. I know they're tough, they're resilient, but with a minute and a half to go, I turn the sucker. And then the next morning, I wake up and see that some guy named Ryan Elvin, a walk-on, the last man on the Houston bench, came up and iced the game with a free throw. It's a great story about that kid. You know, he was an all-district high school player, and he was actually recruited, to come on as a walk-on, and has been a big part of the program. When his father passed, Kelvin Sampson said that jolted our program. So what that tells you is the culture at Houston encompasses everyone from the lowliest walk-on to Jamal Shedd, their star.
Sure.
And always does. And so I just thought to myself, daggone, why didn't I keep that on there? But I figure Houston, the one thing that concerned me about Houston all game long is they were really steadily getting into foul trouble. And by the end, four of their starters were gone. And Ryan Elvin, you know, I'm sure his dad was looking down on him. But it's just an example of the awesome stories that you get in this tournament.
That was a fantastic game. It was the next to last game of the opening weekend to finish on Sunday night. And I stayed with it. Like you say, it was about over. You thought, you know, Houston was just going to close this thing out and head on to the Sweet 16. They ended up winning 195 in overtime. As you talked about, the Cougars had four of their starters foul out. Sharp and Shedd and Cryer had combined for 71 points. But it did leave it up to guys like Ryan Elvin to close it out at the free throw line. I was joking with a friend of mine. Did the guys call him a game even have Ryan Elvin on their scorecard, you know, when they put together their material for their game prep? But the crazy part about it was the Aggies, they rallied late to get it to overtime on a three at the buzzer by maybe the most unlikely guy to hit a three, and that was Anderson Garcia.
Yeah.
They ran this baseline inbounds play where they threw about a 25-foot bounce pass to the top of the key, and Garcia just chucked it up at the buzzer, and it went in. It was only his ninth three-pointer of the season. He's a guy that Texas A&M calls the Dominican Rodman for his rebounding prowess. I mean, that's what he does. He's a rebounder, rim protector. He's this tall, long guy. He played for Mississippi State, but, I mean, he's a key guy for them. But I don't know that anybody would have expected him to hit a buzzer-beating three to send a tournament game to overtime. That was just fantastic. I watched that play no telling how many times, because the fact that bounce pass made it through all those people to get to the top of the key, and then Anderson Garcia just all strings on this three-point try was just crazy. Boots Radford was awesome for A&M. He had 27 and 15 and six assists. But I'm like you. I thought that was one of the best games of the tournament, and I wish you had stayed with it and just hung around for a couple more minutes, because it turned out to be a fantastic game.
I'm so bummed, but I'm like you. You never, I mean, in all the years I've covered college basketball, I have never seen an inbounds bounce pass, because usually the lane is clogged.
Right.
You know, because you're trying to prevent a quick shot and offensive rebound. So the lane is usually clogged. They throw a bounce pass through there. And like you said, Garcia is a rebounding savant, which is his specialty, and he does it as well as anybody in the college game, probably. And he just stepped up there and stroked that thing. Mm-hmm. I mean, he looked like, dude, you should be taking more of these.
right. That was a great game. There are quite a few terrific games on the opening weekend, and we're going to preview the Sweet 16 matchups coming up. My goal was, and I, I was fortunate this year that I had some downtime while the tournament was going on. I do baseball for Vanderbilt TV, and the team's out of town, so we didn't have any games. And so I basically had four wide open days to sit in front of the TV.
Yeah,
and my goal was to watch every game in real time, or at least part of every game. And so starting with the first four, I watched parts of all four of those. I think I ended up seeing at least some portion of the 52 games. I saw at least part of 51 of them. The only game I missed was Clemson and Baylor. I did not see that one. We were out having dinner with some friends on Sunday night. I didn't see that game. And I think I saw at least a little bit of all the rest of them. It was so fun just to plop down and, like, you sit there for hours and just watch games. Or even when I got out in the car, I had the games on the radio and was listening to some of the covers there. But it's so fun. It's such a great event. Those first couple days, really the first 4 days are all great. Because you have games from about central time, from about 11 o'clock in the morning until almost midnight. You can sit and watch games for 12 hours. It's just the best.
Yeah. And for me, who's on Eastern time, you know, you're going to bed at 1. And I mean, that's fine with me, though. And again, it just underscores the fact that this is a great event. It doesn't need to be messed with. I don't know. I vacillate back and forth whether I agree with Joe and admit that expansion is inevitable and find a reasonable number. And then there are those who say, if you touch a hair on this tournament's head, you are committing suicide. That is the NCAA. And so I don't know how much control the NCAA really has anymore now. Yeah. We were just talking about this before we came on the show. The remaining Pac-12 schools, which there are only two, settled with their 10 departing ex-brethren for a $50 million chunk. I still think that's letting them off easy. But with these super conferences, they're going to want more. I mean, the coaches were already griping. The Big East was disappointed about three, and I don't know, the ACC felt a little slighted because – people thought that it was a down year, and now they've got a quarter of the Sweet 16 teams. Our buddy, friend of the show, Wes Durham, had a cool, snarky little tweet to that effect. So I just don't know. But the fact is, what makes these things great, these tournaments great every year, is the possibility of, the playing field being somewhat level on a somewhat neutral court for, David to beat Goliath.
Yeah.
Or somebody like Ryan Elvin coming off the bench. And you're right. I could see the announcers scrambling on their lineup cards. Like,
who's this dude?
What right. we got on him?
Right.
Somebody in the truck, help me out.
Right.
But to hear the backstory about how that kid's father had passed, and human nature being what it is, he's probably saying, I'm up there. This is for Dad.
Sure.
You know, it kind of gets me a little verklempt just thinking about it. And so, yeah, do not mess with my favorite all-time sporting event. Whoever is in charge, whether it's Greg Sankey or the NCAA, you got a great thing going, man. Don't mess it up.
I've thought about this a lot. I don't want them to mess with the tournament either. If you're going to, could you just do something sort of low-key and moderate and maybe just add four more play-in games? And, you know, that would add four teams. You can make it work with the seeds however you wanted to, whether you wanted to make it a couple more 16s playing or a couple more of 10s or 11s or 12s or, you know, whatever the case might be there. But, and then you could play the whole thing still in the same window that you play. You're playing the first four now, only be like a first eight instead of a first four. I don't know.
Right. You don't want to be in May Madness.
Yeah, right. And you know, it's all dictated by when the Masters starts anyway. So,
yeah.
I've felt like that was the case for years. Let's get into some of the coaching moves. With the Sweet 16 is all set. We're going to get to those shortly. It does look like John Calipari will be around for another season at Kentucky with lots of speculation in Lexington. He did his radio show with Tom Leach on Monday night. I did not hear it because we were doing our Vanderbilt radio show at that time, but I saw some of the comments. You wonder how much he might change how they do things. Maybe the coaching staff looks different, but it was a colossal failure against Oakland the other night, and it led a lot to believe that that was Coach Cal's final game, which ironically enough was in Pittsburgh, which is his hometown, but looks like he's going to stay around for some more in Lexington. And again, you wonder, you know, what will next year's team look like? Who comes back? Who's gone? Will they try to put together a little bit older team to play against some older teams that you see in the tournament? But man, it's been an interesting few days to follow that situation since Kentucky was knocked out by Oakland.
Yeah, and the thing about it, some of the comments I've seen from Cal, he was defiantly doubling down. We've always taken young players. We're going to continue to do that. And I'll tell you what, they're going to continue to have trouble in this day and age, because if you don't, I mean, in his own league, a team that they used to own, Tennessee, is now 11-9 against Kentucky, which is, you know, a good record under the Rick Barnes 9-year era. And the reason is, they don't go for that many five-star guys. They'll take them if they can get them. But they take 3- and 4-star guys, you know, coach them up, and now they're starting to make good use of the portal, as are many other schools. And I think you see the teams that have done it well, like a Florida versus one team in Arkansas who did not do it so well this year, ironically, because Moss has lived on transfers. And now you hear that Coach Musselman wants out and wants to go maybe to SMU, which is leaving for the ACC. And so, yeah, I suspect part of Cal's continued survival, I don't care who you are, you're in Kentucky with all those wealthy racehorse owners and coal miners and what have you, $33 million still a heck of a buyout.
Sure.
To $33 million to get a guy to go away. And I think Kentucky fans are just going to have to ride with it. I do see that Cal changed with the times in terms of, hey, man, I need to get some three-point shooters. And they were really good at that. But for whatever reason, and his teams used to really show up in effort stats, rebounding and defense, this team was not solid defensively. And that kid from Oakland, I mean, he came from Division II. And, you know, I'm not going to criticize him because the shot goes in, but his form ain't exactly pretty. He lands with his feet kind of splayed out and, you know, not straight up, straight down. But he makes them. And it's like, you knew this was their dude. He'd only taken, like, ridiculous, like, 6-2s all year.
Yeah.
You knew this guy was going to do this. And yet they were unable to prevent him from going off. So, yeah, he's got some holes to fix. And I don't know if he's made several coaching changes, and some have come because he's lost assistants to other schools. But, you know, maybe he brings back Kenny Payne, with whom he's very familiar, and really helped recruit some of his better teams.
Other coaching hires starting to go down where I live, Mark Byington to Vanderbilt, hours after finishing a 32-win season for James Madison. That team was awesome. They beat Wisconsin in the tournament. They had a tough day against Duke, but that seemed to me to be a really good hire for Vanderbilt. I've not met Mark Byington. I will later this week, but by all accounts, is a great guy, and he's done a good job wherever he's been. Breakthrough season for JMU. They got to the tournament, and he had been previously at Georgia Southern, had a stop as an assistant at Virginia Tech, and has been a few places under Bobby Cremins at College of Charleston. That was his mentor. But I think everybody feels like that was a solid hire for Vanderbilt to replace Jerry Stackhouse. You had Dusty May from FAU to Michigan. You had sort of the Dusty May sweepstakes, it seemed like, was going on. Vanderbilt and Louisville were in the mix there, but in the end, May chose to go coach the Wolverines. Kyle Smith leaving Washington State, where he had a great run for Stanford. Kyle Smith will be the answer to the trivia question, the last ever Pac-12 coach of the year, at least under this setup for the Conference of Champions. Danny Sprinkle goes from Utah State to Washington. Konzo Martin is reportedly close to returning to Missouri State, where he had success before moving to Tennessee and some other places. So quite a few coaches on the move, but really it felt like Dusty May was the big name to get the whole thing started this week.
Yeah, certainly Dusty May was the prize. I contend, though, and I made a tweet that blew up. I said, if Vanderbilt fans were worried that they wouldn't get a good coach, rest assured they did. I think Mark Byington is a perfect fit of coach and school. I think he'll do well at Vanderbilt for a variety of reasons. If you want to know them, VandySports.com interviewed me on a video podcast for 54 and a half minutes.
Man,
you can find it on YouTube.
That might be a personal record for you, huh?
I'm telling you, I couldn't believe it, but it was with our boy Joey Dwyer, who is a young hoop savant who sort of reminds me of myself. But yeah, I think that's a great hire. There's one that we didn't mention yet. Darian DeVries goes from Drake to West Virginia.
Oh yeah,
I think it's a great hire. You know, Danny Sprinkle, what he did at Utah State was incredible. He came from Montana, or Montana State, one of those two. I apologize, I don't know which one. It was his alma mater, whichever one, and where he had success. Everybody left that team. So he goes into the portal. He takes two kids with him from Montana State. Two kids with him there, and then goes into the portal and builds a team that gets to the NCAAs, which was incredible. And he'll do a great job at Washington, which is now going to get tested in the shot up on steroids Big 12. What's crazy, Kevin, is you think about this. Big 12 hung in the balance. Pac-12 was poised to nab their schools, some of their schools. And then the flat opposite happened. The Pac-12 commissioner blew it big time for two reasons. One, if the Big 12 was ripe for plundering, they should have done it after Texas and Oklahoma left for the SEC. They should have done it. And they should have re-upped their TV deal with ESPN, which they tried to make it out like they had a somewhat bogus network. None of that stuff worked. And the exact opposite happened. The Big 12 blunders the Pac-12 and bye-bye Pac-12. But it's amazing how yesterday all these kind of dominoes fell with the coaches. But I'm telling you, man, you got lucky. You're going to have fun from day one with this guy, Mark Byington. He's a disciple of a friend of mine, Bobby Kremins, mm-hmm. who I got to know when he coached at App State, of course, then at Georgia Tech with a lot of success, and closed out his career at College of Charleston, where Byington was his assistant for 7 years. Bobby Kremins says this is the hardest working guy I've ever been around. So that tells you a lot. And it also, I like the stats. If you look at KenPom, they shoot a lot of threes, but they're number five in the nation in defending the three. And they're also in the teens in forcing turnovers. So you're going to see tempo, aggression, pressure, and cranking some three balls.
I was looking through their 14-game win streak they had before they played Duke on Sunday, and almost every game they were scoring in the 80s. So it looks like an exciting style of basketball. And from what I saw some play a handful of times this season, and even going back to when they beat Michigan State at the start of the year, yeah. This seems like a style that's going to get some folks fired up and back into Memorial Gym. So, it felt like a good hire. They're supposed to have a press conference and introduction of Mark Byington on Thursday at Memorial Gym. So it'll be fun. And a new era for that program, and we'll see where it goes from here. Let's get into the games coming up on Thursday out in the West in Los Angeles. 6-seeded Clemson against number 2 Arizona, number 4-seed Alabama against top seed North Carolina. The East is in Boston, where number 6-seed San Diego State plays number 1 UConn, which just has been on just such a roll. And then to me, one of the toughest games to pick, it was number 3 Illinois against number 2-seed Iowa State. We'll talk about that in a moment. In the South on Friday, in Dallas, 11-seeded NC State against number 3 Marquette. 4-seeded Duke versus number 1-seed Houston after they survived. The Midwest is in Detroit. Number 5-seed Gonzaga against top-seeded Purdue. And then the 2s and the 3s. The 3 is Creighton and the 2 is Tennessee. They will face off in the late game on Friday night. Chris, I picked out one game from each day that I thought was maybe the hardest to pick or the most interesting. And I mentioned when I did a bracket for fun before this whole thing started, I thought Illinois and Iowa State was one of the hardest, maybe the hardest game to pick out of the whole thing after I had those two advancing that far. I ended up going with Iowa State, but the Illini are really playing well. I could see that one going either way. And then on Friday, I think Purdue might have big problems with Gonzaga. You watch Zach Edey, and I watched a lot of their game this past weekend, the second round game. He really controls the game for the Boilermakers, but I feel like Mark Few's going to have a good plan, including pushing the tempo, making Edey run, just keep him from camping out in the lane all the time like he likes to do, really, on both ends of the court. I would not be surprised at all if Gonzaga knocked out the number one seed Purdue. I don't know if there's a couple games that maybe stand out for you or thoughts on those matchups, but those are the games that we'll see coming up this weekend in the regionals.
Yeah, I think we'll start with them, and there's a couple that I'll pick out as well. You know, Purdue and Gonzaga have already played. It was in Maui with that loaded field that had seemingly most of the top 10 in it. Edey got Graham E.K. and Anton Watson in foul trouble in that first game. And, you know, there's tape, videotaped evidence of what went wrong there. And you know that Gonzaga has broken that down, and they're going to do a little bit better job with Edey. I suspect what will happen there is that they will try to pick one guy from Purdue that they can sort of leave and maybe guard Edey with, if you will, a player and a half, where one player's attention is split between his man, but more closely shading Edey, so it'll make it tough for their guards to present the ball into the post. And if that happens, they can slow him down a little bit. And if Purdue's guards don't shoot it, like we saw last year, when they fouled Fairley Dickinson as a 1-16, it can be a long night. And Gonzaga is a lot better since that team in Honolulu. They were still trying to get over the loss of a kid named Steele Venters, their version of Dalton Connect, a transfer from Eastern Washington, who was a big-time scorer, a big guard. And I think they finally figured out a way toward the end of the season. And, you know, some people were worried whether they were even going to get into the tournament, and that was no problem. They had done more than enough, including win at Kentucky. So I'm like you. Shoot, I'm just going to pick it. I think this will beat Purdue. I really do. I think they will. They'll figure out a way. Now, going back to Iowa State, Illinois, this is a superhero comic book days quote where the irresistible force meets the immovable object.
Right.
You know, it was always like Superman versus such and such, you know, and who's going to win? And Iowa State is the number one D in the country. Illinois has the number one offense. So to me, I've always been fond of and really believe that is why the good Dr. Naismith put the peach basket up there. You know, he wanted the ball to go in. So we joked a couple of shows ago, we're glad they eventually cut a hole in it.
Right. It makes it a little bit easier to get the ball out.
Yeah, because they're going to need it. I think.
Although, you know, if they hadn't, it'd make it easier to set up your press.
It definitely would do that, because you'd have to get the ladder out,
right,
and get the ball, unless Manute Bol was around.
And or even Zach Edey, he could probably pull it out.
Yeah, exactly. You know, standing reach of 9 feet or whatever it is. But I think this, I'm an appreciator of defense now. Lord knows I had to be when I covered Tennessee during the Kevin O'Neill era.
Probably appreciate it.
I remember a 36-34 loss at Auburn when Cliff Ellis was the coach there.
Man.
They were both laughing and joking about how the good Dr. Naismith was spinning in his grave, and they had set back the game like a half century. So
you probably learned some new language covering Kevin O'Neill back in those days too.
Oh, with Kevin. Oh, he was the most creative cursor I've ever been around. This is a family show, so I can't even get into that. But, and you know, in latter days, just talking to Rick Barnes about defense, gap defense, you know, building a wall, helping your teammates out, help side, I've become an appreciator of it. But make no mistake, I love offense. And to me, a good defense is always going to be on its heels against a terrific offense, because you just don't know what's going to happen. And Illinois has got some cats that can score. They can go, you know, Terrence Shannon being able to come back from a little, well, could be a big legal issue. I don't know. But he was able to come back from that and not miss a beat. He's as hot as anybody in the country. They can go big. They can go small. It's crazy, but Illinois has not been out of the first weekend since 05 when they played in the Final Four. And Iowa State hasn't been to the Final Four since 1944.
Wow.
So the Athletic pointed out there were only eight teams in the field then, and most of the college-aged men were fighting in the big one, wow. WW2. So it has been a long, long time for Iowa State, and they're going to be really fired up. But again, I think good offense is so unpredictable that it's going to put good defense on its heels. I like Illinois there.
Wanted to ask you about the Creighton and Tennessee game. Tennessee survived by the skin of their teeth. That they did not have a good offensive game, but they did played enough defense to win their second round game against Texas in the Rick Barnes Bowl the other night. And they were clutch at the foul line. Everybody who got up there, whether it was Adu or the guards or whoever it was, man, they just cashed him in, and they got to the finish line with a 4-point win. But they're going to have to score a whole lot more points and shoot a whole lot better if they're going to go even farther, especially playing Creighton in this next game.
Yeah, I'm trying to pick out the best cliche for Tennessee shooting against Texas, and I'm sorry, but I'm just going to have to go with the old reliable. They couldn't throw it in the ocean from the pier, and it was team-wide. What's crazy about Tennessee teams of recent vintage is when they get into a scoring drought, it's not just one or two. It's like a cancer that eats at the whole team. Like, everybody is missing. And I think, I don't know, I'm no psychologist, but I just think that maybe, and they get a lot of good shots, but I think maybe kids try to hurry, try to, you know, rescue the team by themselves and maybe force a few shots. Rick Barnes would know that better than me, having broken down the film. But I've never seen the likes of a team-wide drought like they have gotten into, even with Dalton Knecht. But good news is they have Dalton Knecht. And he had, I'd say, only 18, but he made four free throws in a row down the stretch that essentially – provided the margin of victory, and his teammates wanted him to have the ball. He wanted to have the ball. He had a great story, which he hardly says anything, right? I mean, he's one of the least quotable dudes, and no knock on him. He's a good guy, but he gave a quote to somebody in the locker room where he and his father back in the day would watch the NCAA tournament and see guys go up there and make clutch free throws. And dad was like, yeah, D, that could be you one day. And, you know, he's worked his butt off to be able to do that. He'd fallen into a little bit of a slump from free throw shooting and worked with Coach Barnes, getting a little more height on his ball, and he hits four in a row. So I think this game, Tennessee, usually when a team doesn't try to pressure them defensively and just wants to run and get up and down and play like they play, then usually it's a high-scoring game. The ball goes into the basket. So Creighton loves to get up and down. Tennessee loves to get up and down. It may be against my better judgment. I'm calling Tennessee for this one. I think they've got a little more depth than Creighton. And I'll tell you what, if Vescovi can break out of his funk, you just keep waiting for it. If he can really break out of his funk in this game, I think Tennessee can win by 6 or 8 points.
I could see Tennessee winning this one, too. And again, I'm not Rick Barnes. I'm not any sort of coach. But one thing that stands out about them is when you watch them, and we even saw this in the SEC tournament when they played Mississippi State, when the shots don't go down, man, get some post touches. Send it into Adu or one of your other big guys.
Or drive it.
Yeah, drive. You know, get Kinnett going downhill to the basket. Don't just stand out there and jack threes. It feels like to me, and like you were saying, one person tries to try to get it all back at one time. Don't just stand out there and shoot three after three after three. You know, try some other ways of scoring, whether it's getting Ziegler on a drive to drive and dish to somebody, or just, you know, post up Adu down low. You got to figure out other ways to score when the threes aren't going down. But I think they'll probably get this one done against Creighton and play in the regional final. And they're trying to get to a place they've never been before. They have not been to a Final Four. For all the great players and good teams they've had over the years for the Volunteers, yeah, they've never been able to break through and win that last one. And that regional finals that we'll see on Saturday and Sunday of this weekend, to me, that's the hardest game of the entire tournament, no matter who you are, because that to me is sort of the dividing line on how you feel about your tournament and in a lot of ways your season. There's a big difference between going to the Elite Eight and going to the Final Four where you put up a banner in your arena. But I think Tennessee will beat Creighton, and it'll be interesting to see whether it's Gonzaga or Purdue in the next round up in Detroit.
Yeah, I think so too. You're right, though. Tennessee, they've got two guys, Josiah Jordan-James and Santiago Vescovi, who are fifth-year seniors, who can put the ball on the floor, who can get to the rim, but seldom get to the rim looking to score. They're unselfish to a fault and try to dish. And I think those dudes, if the ball's not dropping, they just need to put their head down and get to the rack. And if they do that, they can win. Another intriguing game to me is Houston versus Duke. I think Duke is young, but really talented. Houston is beaten up. I don't know. You could almost see Duke kind of pulling something off there.
I could see that too. I agree.
Yeah, Duke is coming off a Sweet 16 disappointment of a year ago, losing to Tennessee. And as I said, Houston is a little bit banged up, so we'll see. I'll tell you, that Houdini act that Houston pulled against Texas A&M, I'm not going to put anything past them. They've just got such a good culture, and Kelvin Sampson is such a great coach, and their kids are just bought in to this blue-collar way of doing things. It's a, they just, it's a lunch pail deal. Everybody contributes, everybody does the dirty work. And Jamal Shedd, I think he's going to probably get my vote. I'm on the Cousy Award panel as the point guard of the year.
One more team to talk about, and I picked them to repeat as national champions, which is really hard to do. It's only happened a couple times since UCLA. But UConn, to me, has looked as impressive as anybody in this tournament. They rolled through the first two rounds. They'll play San Diego State next, which that'll be a tough game in Boston on Thursday. But if you pick the Chalk and you pick UConn to repeat, you're probably still feeling pretty good about your selection, I would say.
I would, too. And I think Danny Hurley is. Sunday night after they won, his quote was, "We're bulletproof." And that's pretty brash at tournament time. You can see it if a player said it, but a coach handing out bulletin board material?
Yeah.
He must feel pretty daggone certain. And I would, too, if I were him. I just don't know that I'd voice it like that. But they've got firepower at every position. Alex Caravan is a guy that, to me, is an unsung hero for that team. And like I've said before, the kid they got from Rutgers, the transfer, Cam Spencer, is he just filled in perfectly for the gaps that they lost to graduation. And then Klingon, he's the equal of probably any big man in the country, certainly any big man left in this tournament, except for maybe Zach Edey, who's probably going to be the two-time player of the year. So, yeah, UConn's looking pretty tough. San Diego State has made a good little run to get this far, but I don't know that they're as talented as the team that had a chance to win it all last year and got to the finals. So, Hurley says they're bulletproof. And I don't know that you make a statement like that unless you're pretty sure. And, you know, they're bludgeoning people. They did it last year. They're just woodshedding people. And, that's Danny. He's He's not afraid to say what's on his mind.
So. And his team was ahead by about 20 at halftime. In one of the games I was watching, he was mad because they didn't play good enough defense in the last couple possessions. But
yeah, he's such a grump. Yeah. But I'll tell you what, he comes from great coaching genes, and his father, of course, being the legendary Bobby Sr., who took St. Anthony's in New Jersey to I don't even know how many state tournaments, but a competitor. And the Hurley brothers learned that from him. And but Danny is the one that I feel like last year might have had a chip on his shoulder, might have felt like he had something to prove. He proved it. And now he's like, come on, show me what you got. And so far, nobody has been able to show him enough.
Well, Chris, I don't know if our show is bulletproof or not, but we've got a lot more games to talk about. By the time we visit again next week, we'll have a Final Four. So enjoy the games, my man. It's always fun to do the podcast with you.
Well, I appreciate it. And I don't know how much of a rest I needed. I was scanning the schedule for NIT games last night.
There's nothing wrong with that. I watched some of the Iowa and West Virginia women's game. Saw Caitlin Clark playing for Iowa. It was her last home game. As they look to advance in the tournament, and they were able to pull it out at the end. So, yeah, I'm like you. I'm a junkie. I was looking for some more games to watch, too.
I wanted like, more balls.
It's like I guess I could go find some replays of the games from this past weekend, maybe watch that Clemson and Baylor game that I missed. But, fun.
I saw a little bit of that for you, and Clemson did the ACC proud. Yeah. West Durham had every right to send that snarky tweet.
All right, my man. Thanks, as always.
Thanks, brother.
He's Chris Dortch. I'm Kevin Ingram. That is the Blue Ribbon College Basketball Podcast. We'll talk to you next time.